I did what I said. I did it, and I told the detective. Bullshit, Albo, I said. You weren't even there. You were at a party. The guy who drove you home is a policeman, for God's sake. You didn't do it. You know that. Everybody knows that. Don't give me that shit. Hubble looked down at the floor, thought for a moment. I can't explain it, he said. I can't say anything about it. I just need to know what happens next. I looked at him again. What happens next? I said. You stay here until Monday morning, and then you go back to Margrave. Then I guess they'll let you go. Will they? He said, like he was debating with himself. You weren't even there, I said again. They know that. They might want to know why you confessed when you didn't do anything, and they'll want to know why the guy had your phone number. What if I can't tell them? He said. Can't? Or won't? I asked him. I can't tell them, he said. I can't tell anybody anything. He looked away and shuddered, very frightened. But I can't stay in here, he said. I can't stand it. Hubble was a financial guy. They give out their phone numbers like confetti, talking to anybody they meet about hedge funds or tax havens, anything to transfer some guy's hard-earned dollars their way. But this phone number was printed on a scrap of torn computer paper, not engraved on a business card, and hidden in a shoe, not stuffed in a wallet. And playing in the background, like a rhythm section, was the fear coming out of the guy. Why can't you tell anybody? I asked him. Because I can't, he said. Wouldn't say anything more. I was suddenly weary. 24 hours ago, I had jumped off a greyhound at a cloverleaf and walked down a new road, striding out happily through the warm morning rain, avoiding people, avoiding involvement. No baggage, no hassle. Freedom. I didn't want it interrupted by Hubble, or by Finley, or by some tall guy who got himself shot in his shaved head. I didn't want any part of it. I just wanted some peace and quiet, and to go looking for Blind Blake. I wanted to find some 80-year-old who might remember him from some bar. I should be talking to that old guy who swept up around the prison, not Hubble. Yuppie asshole. He was thinking hard. I could see what Finley had meant. I had never seen anybody think so visibly. His mouth was working soundlessly, and he was fiddling with his fingers, like he was checking off positives and negatives, weighing things up. I watched him. I saw him make his decision. He turned and looked over at me. I need some advice, he said. I've got a problem. I laughed at him. Well, what a surprise, I said. I'd never have guessed. I thought you were here because you were bored with playing golf on the weekend. I need help, he said. You've had all the help you're going to get, I said. Without me, you'd be bent forward over your bed right now with a line of big, horny guys forming at the door. And so far, you haven't exactly overwhelmed me with gratitude for that. He looked down for a moment, nodded. I'm sorry, he said. I'm very grateful. Believe me, I am. You saved my life. You took care of it. That's why you've got to tell me what to do. I'm being threatened. I let the revelation hang in the air for a moment. I know that, I said. That's pretty obvious. Well, not just me, he said. My family, as well. He was getting me involved. I looked at him, He started thinking again. His mouth was working. He was pulling on his fingers, eyes flicking left and right. Like, over here was a big pile of reasons, and over there was another big pile of reasons. Which pile was bigger? "Have you got family?" he asked me. "No," I said. What else could I say? My parents were both dead. I had a brother whom I never saw, so I had no family. No idea whether I wanted one, either. Maybe, maybe not. "I've been married 10 years, Hubble said. 10 years, last month. Had a big party. I've got 2 children. Boy age 9, girl age 7. Great wife. Great kids. I love them like crazy." He meant it. I could see that. He lapsed into silence, misting over as he thought about his family, wondering how the hell he came to be in here without them. He wasn't the first guy to sit in this cell wondering that, and he wouldn't be the last. "We've got a nice place," he said. "Out on Beckman Drive. Bought there 5 years ago. A lot of money, but it was worth it. You know Beckman?" "No," I said again. He was afraid to get to the point. Pretty soon he'd be telling me about the wallpaper in the downstairs half-bath, and how he planned to pay for his daughter's orthodonture. I let him talk. Prison conversation. "Anyway," he said eventually, "it's all falling apart now." He sat there in his chinos and his polo shirt. He had picked up his white sweater and wrapped it around his shoulders again. Without his glasses, he looked older, more vacant. People who wear glasses, without them, they always look defocused, vulnerable, out in the open, a layer removed. He looked like a tired old man. One leg was thrust forward. I could see the patterned sole of his shoe. What did he call a threat? Some kind of exposure or embarrassment? Something that might blow away the perfect life he had described on Beckman Drive? Maybe it was his wife who was involved in something. Maybe he was covering for her. Maybe she'd been having an affair with the tall dead guy. Maybe lots of things. Maybe anything. Maybe his family was threatened by disgrace, bankruptcy, stigma, cancellation of country club membership. I went around in circles. I didn't live in Hubble's world. I didn't share his frame of reference. I had seen him trembling and shaking with fear, but I had no idea how much it took to make a guy like that afraid, or how little. When I first saw him at the station house yesterday, he had looked upset and agitated. Since then, he had been from time to time trembling, paralyzed, staring with fear, sometimes resigned and apathetic, clearly very afraid of something. I leaned on the cell wall and waited for him to tell me what. "They're threatening us," he said again. "If I ever tell anybody what's going on, they said they'll break into our house, round us all up, in my bedroom. They said they'll nail me to the wall and cut my balls off. Then they'll make my wife eat them. Then they'll cut our throats. They said they'll make our children watch. And then they'll do things to them after we're dead that we'll never know about." 7. "So what should I do?" Hubble asked me. "What would you do?" He was staring over at me, waiting for a reply. What would I do? If someone threatened me like that, they would die. I'd rip them apart. Either as they spoke, or days, or months, or years later. I would hunt them down and rip them apart. But Hubble couldn't do that. He had a family, 3 hostages waiting to be taken, 3 hostages already taken, taken as soon as the threat was made.
"What should I do?"
he asked me again. I felt pressure. I had to say something, and my forehead hurt. It was bruising up after the massive impact with the red boy's face. I stepped to the bars and glanced down the row of cells, leaned against the end of the bunk, thought for a moment, came up with the only possible answer, but not the answer Hubble wanted to hear. "Nothing you can do," I said. "You've been told to keep your mouth shut, so you keep it shut. Don't tell anybody what's going on. Ever." He looked down at his feet, dropped his head into his hands, gave a moan of abject misery, like he was crushed with disappointment.
"I've got to talk to somebody," he said. "I've got to get out of this. I mean it. I've got to get out. I've got to talk to somebody."
I shook my head at him.
"You can't do that," I said.
"They've told you to say nothing, so you say nothing. That way you stay alive. You and your family." He looked up, shuddered.
"Something very big is going on," he said. "I've got to stop it if I can."
I shook my head again. If something very big was going on around people who used threats like that, then he was never going to stop it. He was on board, and he was going to stay on board. I smiled a bleak smile at him and shook my head for the third time. He nodded like he understood, like he finally accepted the situation. He went back to rocking and staring at the wall. His eyes were open, red and naked without the gold rims. He sat silently for a long time. I couldn't understand the confession. He should have kept his mouth shut. He should have denied any involvement with the dead guy, should have said he had no idea why his phone number was written down in the guy's shoe. Should have said he had no idea what pluribus was. Then he could have just gone home. "Hubble," I said, "why did you confess?" He looked up, waited a long moment before replying.
I can't answer that," he said. "I'd be telling you more than I should."
"I already know more than I should," I said. "Finlay asked about the dead guy and pluribus, and you flipped. So I know there's a link between you and the dead guy and whatever pluribus is." He gazed at me, looking vague.
"Is Finlay that black detective?"
he said. "Yes," I said. "Finlay, chief of detectives."
"He's new," Hubble said. "Never seen him before. It was always gray. He was there years, since I was a kid. There's only one detective, you know. Don't know why they say chief of detectives when there's only one. There's only 8 people in the whole police department. Chief Morrison, he's been there years. Then the desk man, 4 uniformed men, a woman, and the detective, Gray. Only now it's Finlay, the new man.
Black guy. The first we've ever had.
Gray killed himself, you know. Hung himself from a rafter in his garage. February, I think."
I let him ramble on. Prison conversation. It passes the time. That's what it's for. Hubble was good at it. But I still wanted him to answer my question. My forehead hurt, and I wanted to bathe it with cold water. I wanted to walk around for a while. I wanted to eat. I wanted coffee. I waited without listening as Hubble rambled through the municipal history of Margrave. Suddenly he stopped.
"What were you asking me?"
he said. "Why did you confess to killing the guy?" I repeated. He looked around, then he looked straight at me.
"There's a link," he said. "That's all it's safe to say right now. The detective mentioned the guy and used the word pluribus, which made me jump. I was startled. I couldn't believe he knew the connection. Then I realized he hadn't known there was a connection, but I had just told him by being startled. You see? I had given it away. I felt I'd blown it, given away the secret, and I mustn't do that because of the threat."
He tailed off and went quiet. An echo of the fright and panic he had felt in Finlay's office was back. He looked up again, took a deep breath.
"I was terrified," he said.
"But then the detective told me the guy was dead. He had been shot. I got scared, because if they had killed him, they might kill me, too. I can't really tell you why, but there's a link, like you worked out. If they got that particular guy, does that mean they are going to get me, too? Or doesn't it? I had to think it out. I didn't even know for sure who had killed the guy, but then the detective told me about the violence. Did he tell you about that?"
I nodded. "The injuries," I said. "Sounded pretty unpleasant."
"Right,"
Hubble said. "And it proves it was who I thought it was. So I was really scared. I was thinking, are they looking for me too? Or aren't they? I just didn't know. I was terrified. I thought for ages it was going around and around in my head. The detective was going crazy. I didn't say anything because I was thinking. Seemed like hours. I was terrified, you know?"
He fell back into silence. He was running it through his head again, probably for the thousandth time, trying to figure out if his decision had been the right one.
"I suddenly figured out what to do," he said. "I had three problems. If they were after me, too, I had to avoid them. Hide, you know, to protect myself. But if they weren't after me, then I had to stay silent, right? To protect my wife and kids. And from their point of view, that particular guy needed shooting. Three problems. So I confessed."
I didn't follow his reasoning. Didn't make much sense the way he was explaining it to me. I looked blankly at him.
"Three separate problems, right?" he said. "I decided to get arrested. Then I was safe if they were after me, because they can't get at me in here, right? They're out there, and I'm in here. That's problem number one solved. But I also figured, this is the complicated bit, if they actually were not after me at all, then why don't I get arrested but don't say anything about them? They would think I had got arrested by mistake or whatever, and they see that I'm not talking. They see. Okay? It proves I'm safe. It's like a demonstration that I'm dependable. A sort of proof. Trial by ordeal sort of a thing. That's problem number two solved. And by saying it was me actually killed the guy, it sort of definitely puts me on their side. It's like a statement of loyalty, right? And I thought they might be grateful I had pointed the heat in the wrong direction for a while, so that was problem number three. Solved."
I stared at him. No wonder he had clammed up and thought like crazy for 40 minutes when he was in with Finley. 3 birds with 1 stone. That's what he had been aiming for. The part about proving he could be trusted not to spill his guts was okay. Whoever they were, they would notice that. A spell in jail without talking was a rite of passage, a badge of honor. Counted for a lot. Good thinking, Hubble. Unfortunately, the other part was pretty shaky. They couldn't get to him in here? He had to be joking. No better place in the world to ace a guy than prison. You know where he is. You got all the time you need. Lots of people who'll do it for you. Lots of opportunity. Cheap, too. On the street, a hit would cost you what? $1,000? $2,000? Plus a risk. Inside, it costs you a carton of cigarettes. Plus no risk, because nobody would notice. Now, prison was not a safe hiding place. Bad thinking, Hubble. And there was another flaw, too. What are you going to do on Monday? I asked him. You'll be back home, doing whatever you do. You'll be walking around Margrave or Atlanta or wherever it is you walk around. If they're after you, won't they get you then? He started up with the thinking again, going at it like crazy. He hadn't thought very far ahead before. Yesterday afternoon it had been blind panic. Deal with the present, not a bad principle, except pretty soon the future rolls in and that needs dealing with too. I'm just hoping for the best, Hubble said. I sort of felt if they wanted to get me, they might cool off after a while. I'm very useful to them. I hope they'll think about that. Right now, it's a very tense situation, but it's all going to calm back down. Very soon, I might just make it through. If they get me, they get me. I don't care anymore. It's my family I'm worried about. He stopped and shrugged, blew a sigh. Not a bad guy. He hadn't set out to be some big criminal. It had crept up on the blind side, sucked him in so gently he hadn't noticed, until he wanted out. If he was very lucky, they wouldn't break all his bones until after he was dead. How much does your wife know? I asked him. He glanced over, an expression of horror on his face.
Nothing, he said.
Nothing at all. I haven't told her anything. Not a thing. I couldn't. It's all my secret. Nobody else knows a thing. You'll have to tell her something, I said. She's sure to have noticed you're not at home, vacuuming the pool or whatever you do on the weekend. I was just trying to lighten it up, but it didn't work out. Hubble went quiet, misting over again at the thought of his backyard in the early fall sunlight. His wife maybe fussing over rose bushes or whatever. His kids darting about shrieking. Maybe they had a dog, and a 3-car garage with European sedans waiting to be hosed off, a basketball hoop over the middle door waiting for the 9-year-old to grow strong enough to dunk the heavy ball, a flag over the porch, early leaves waiting to be swept, family life on a Saturday. But not this Saturday. Not for this guy. Maybe she'll think it's all a mistake, he said. Maybe they've told her. I don't know. We know one of the policemen, Dwight Stevenson. My brother married his wife's sister. I don't know what he'll have said to her. I guess I'll deal with that on Monday. I'll say it was some kind of terrible mistake. She'll believe it. Everybody knows mistakes are made. He was thinking out loud. Hubble, I said, What did the tall guy do to them that was liable to get himself shot in the head? He stood up and leaned on the wall, rested his foot on the edge of the steel toilet pan, looked at me, wouldn't answer. Now for the big question. What about you? I asked him. What have you done to them, liable to get yourself shot in the head? He wouldn't answer. The silence in our cell was terrible. I let it crash around for a while. Couldn't think of anything more to say. Hubble clunked his shoe against the metal toilet pan. A rattly little rhythm. Sounded like a Bo Diddley riff. You ever heard of Blind Blake? I asked him. He stopped clunking and looked up.
Who?
He said blankly. Doesn't matter, I said. I'm going to find a bathroom. I need to put a wet towel on my head. It hurts.
I'm not surprised, he said. I'll come with you.
He was anxious not to be left alone. Understandable. I was going to be his minder for the weekend. Not that I had any other plans. We walked down the cell road to a kind of open area at the end. I saw the fire door Spivey had used the night before. Beyond it was a tiled opening. Over the opening was a clock, nearly 12 noon. Clocks in prisons are bizarre. Why measure hours and minutes when people think in years and decades? The tiled entrance was clogged with men. I pushed through and Hubble followed. It was a large, tiled room, square, a strong disinfectant stink. One wall had the doorway. On the left was a row of shower stalls, open. The back wall was a row of toilet cubicles, open at the front, divided by waist-high partitions. The right wall was a row of wash basins, very communal. Not a big deal if you'd been in the army all your life. But Hubble wasn't happy, not what he was used to at all. All the fittings were steel. Everything that would normally be porcelain was stainless steel, for safety. A smashed-up porcelain washbasin yields some pretty good shards. A decent-sized sharp piece would make a good weapon. For the same reason, the mirrors over the basins were sheets of polished steel. A bit dull, but fit for the purpose. You could see yourself in them, but you couldn't smash them up and stab somebody with a fragment. I stepped over to a basin and ran cold water, took a wad of paper towels from the dispenser and soaked them, held them to my bruised forehead. Hubble stood around doing nothing. I kept the cold towels on for a while and then took some more. Water ran down my face. Felt good. There was no real injury. No flesh there, just skin over solid bone. Not much to injure. And impossible to break. A perfect arch, nature's strongest structure. That's why I avoid hitting anything with my hands. Hands are pretty fragile. All kinds of small bones and tendons in there. A punch big enough to deck that red boy would have smashed my hand up pretty good. I'd have joined him in the hospital. Not much point in that. I patted my face dry and leaned up close to the steel mirror to check out the damage. Not bad. I combed my hair with my fingers. As I leaned against the sink, I could feel the sunglasses in my pocket. The red boy's shades. The spoils of victory. I took them out and put them on, gazed at my dull reflection. As I messed about in front of the steel mirror, I saw the start of some kind of a commotion happening behind me. I heard a brief warning from Hubble, and I turned around. The sunglasses dimmed the bright light. 5 white guys were trawling across the room. Biker types. Orange suits, of course. More torn-off sleeves, but with black leather additions, caps, belts, fingerless gloves, big beards. All 5 were big, heavy man, with that hard, slabby fat which is almost muscle, but not quite. All five had crude tattoos on their arms and their faces, swastikas, on their cheeks, under their eyes, and on their foreheads. The Aryan Brotherhood, white trash prison gang. As the five swept the room, the other occupants melted away. Any who didn't get the message were seized and hustled to the door, thrown out into the corridor. Even the soapy, naked guys from the shower stalls. Within seconds, the big bathroom was empty, except for the five bikers and Hubble and me. The five big men fanned out in a loose arc around us. These were big, ugly guys. The swastika tattoos on their faces were scratched in, roughly inked. My assumption was they had come to recruit me, somehow hijack the fact that I had knocked over a red boy, claim my bizarre celebrity for their cause, turn it into a race triumph for the Brotherhood. But I was wrong. My assumption was way out, so I was left unprepared. The guy in the middle of the five was looking back and forth between Hubble and me. His eyes flicked across. They stopped on me.
"Okay, he's the one," he said, looking straight at me.
Two things happened. The end two bikers grabbed Hubble and ran him to the door, and the boss man swung a big fist at my face. I saw it late, dodged left, and it caught me on the shoulder. I was spun around by the blow, grabbed from behind by the neck, two huge hands at my throat, strangling me. The boss man lined up for another shot at my gut. If it landed, I was a dead man. I knew that much. So I leaned back and kicked out. Smashed the boss man's balls like I was trying to punt a football right out of the stadium. The big Oxford shoe crunched him real good. The welt hit him like a blunt axe. My shoulders were hunched, and I was pumping up my neck to resist the strangler. He was wrenching hard. I was losing it. I reached up and broke his little fingers. I heard the knuckles splinter over the roaring in my ears. Then I broke his ring fingers, more splintering, like pulling a chicken apart. He let go. The third guy waded in. He was a solid mountain of lard, sheathed with heavy slabs of meat, like armor. Nowhere to hit him. He was pounding me with short jabs to the arm and chest. I was jammed back between two sinks, the mountain of lard pressing up. Nowhere to hit him, except his eyes. I jammed my thumb into his eye, hooked the tips of my fingers in his ear, and squeezed. My thumbnail popped his eyeball sideways. I pushed my thumb in. His eyeball was nearly out. He was screaming and pulling on my wrist. I held on. The boss man was up on one knee. I kicked hard at his face. Missed. Caught him in the throat instead. Smashed his voice box. He went back down. I went for the big guy's other eye. Missed. I held on with my thumb, like pushing it through a bloody steak. He went down. I spun away from the wall. The guy with the broken fingers ran for the door. The guy with the eye out was flopping about on the floor, screaming. The boss man was choking on his smashed voice box. I was grabbed from behind again. I twisted away. A red boy. Two of them. I was dizzy. I was going to lose it now. But they just grabbed me and ran me to the door. Sirens were going off. "Get out of here, man!" screamed the red boys over the sirens. "This is ours! We did this, understand? Red boys did this. We'll take the fall, man!" They hurled me into the crowd outside. I understood. They were going to say they did it, not because they wanted to protect me from the blame, because they wanted to claim the credit, a race victory. I saw Hubble bouncing around in the crowd. I saw guards. I saw hundreds of men. I saw Spivey. I grabbed Hubble, and we hustled back to the cell. Sirens were blasting. Guards were tumbling out of the door. I could see shotguns and clubs. Boots clattered, shouting and screaming, sirens. We raced to the cell, fell inside. I was dizzy and panting. I had taken a battering. The sirens were deafening. Couldn't talk. I splashed water on my face. The sunglasses were gone. Must have fallen off. I heard screaming at the door. I turned and saw Spivey. He was screaming at us to get out. He rushed into the cell. I grabbed my coat from the bunk. Spivey seized Hubble by the elbow. Then he grabbed me and straight-armed both of us out of there. He was screaming at us to run. Sirens were blasting. He ran us to the emergency door where the guards had rushed out, shoved us through and ran us upstairs, up and up. My lungs were giving out. There was a door at the top of the last flight painted with a big figure 6. We crashed through. He hustled us down a row of cells, shoved us into an empty cell and flung the iron gate shut. It crashed and locked. He ran off. I collapsed on the bed, eyes tight shut. When I opened them again, Hubble was sitting on a bed looking over at me. We were in a big cell, probably twice as wide as the last one. 2 separate beds, one on each side. A sink, a john, a wall of bars. Everything was brighter and cleaner. It was very quiet. The air smelled better. This was the holding floor. This was floor 6. This was where we should have been all the time.
"What the hell happened to you in there?" Hubble asked.
I just shrugged at him. A meal cart appeared outside our cell. It was dragged by an old white guy. Not a guard, some kind of an orderly. Looked more like an old steward on an ocean liner. He passed a tray through an oblong slot in the bars. Covered plates, paper cups, thermos. We ate the food sitting on our beds. I drank all the coffee. Then I paced the cell. Shook the gate. It was locked. The 6th floor was calm and quiet. A big, clean cell. Separate beds. A mirror. Towels. I felt much better up here. Hubble piled the meal debris on the tray and shoved it out under the gate into the corridor. He lay down on his bed, put his hands behind his head, stared at the ceiling. Doing time. I did the same. But I was thinking hard, because they had definitely gone through a selection process. They had looked us both over very carefully and chosen me. Quite definitely chosen me. Then they had tried to strangle me. They would have killed me, except for one thing. The guy with his hands around my throat had made a mistake. He had me from behind, which was in his favor, and he was big enough and strong enough. But he hadn't balled up his fingers. The best way is to use the thumbs on the back of the neck, but fold up the fingers. Do it with knuckle pressure, not finger pressure. The guy had left his fingers out straight, so I had been able to reach up and snap them off. His mistake had saved my life. No doubt about that. Soon as he was neutralized, it was 2 against 1, and I had never had a problem with those kind of odds. But it was still a straightforward attempt to kill me. They came in, chose me, tried to kill me. And Spivey had just happened to be outside the bathroom. He had set it up. He had employed the Aryan Brotherhood to kill me. He had ordered the attack and waited, ready to burst in and find me dead. And he had planned it yesterday before 10 in the evening. That was clear. That's why he had left us on the wrong floor. On the 3rd, not the 6th. On a convict floor, not the holding floor. Everybody had known we should have been on the holding floor. The 2 guards last night in the reception bunker, they had been totally clear about it. It had said so on their battered clipboard. But at 10 o'clock, Spivey had left us on the 3rd floor, where he knew he could have me killed. He had told the Aryans to attack me at 12 o'clock the next day. He had been waiting outside that bathroom at 12 o'clock, ready to burst in, ready to see my body lying on the tiles. But then his plan had fouled up. I wasn't killed. The Aryans were beaten off. The Red Boys had piled in to seize the moment. Mayhem had broken out. A riot was starting. Spivey was panicking. He hit the alarms and called the crash squads, rushed us off the floor up to the 6th, and left us up here. According to all the paperwork, the 6th floor is where we had been all the time. A neat fallback. It made me fireproof as far as investigation went. Spivey had chosen the fallback option which said we were never there. He had a couple of serious injuries on his hands, probably even a dead guy. I figured the boss man must have choked to death. Spivey must know I had done it, but he could never say so now, because according to him, I was never there. I lay on the bed and stared at the concrete ceiling. I exhaled gently. The plan was clear. No doubt about Spivey's plan at all. The fallback was coherent. An aborted plan with a neat fallback position. But why? I didn't understand it. Let's say the strangler had balled up his fingers. They would have got me then. I would have been dead. Dumped on the bathroom floor with my big, swollen tongue sticking out. Spivey would have rushed in and found me. Why? What was Spivey's angle? What did he have against me? I'd never seen him before. Never been anywhere near him or his damn prison. Why the hell should he operate an elaborate plan to get me dead? I couldn't begin to figure it out. 8. Hubble slept for a while on the cot across from mine. Then he stirred and woke up, writhed around, looked disoriented for a moment, until he remembered where he was. Tried to check the time on his watch, but saw only a band of pale skin where the heavy Rolex had been. Pushed against the bridge of his nose and remembered he had lost his eyeglasses. Sighed and flopped his head back onto the striped prison pillow. One very miserable guy. I could understand his fear, but he also looked defeated, like he had just rolled the dice and lost, like he'd been counting on something to happen, and it hadn't happened, so now he was back in despair. Then I began to understand that, too. The dead guy was trying to help you, wasn't he? I said. The question scared him.
I can't tell you that, can I?
He answered. I need to know, I said. Maybe you approached the guy for help. Maybe you talked to him. Maybe that's why he got killed. Maybe it looks like now you'll start talking to me, which could get me killed, too. Hubble nodded and rocked back and forth on his bed, took a deep breath, looked straight at me.
He was an investigator, he said.
I brought him down here because I want this whole thing stopped. I don't want to be involved anymore. I'm not a criminal. I'm scared to death, and I want out. He was going to get me out and take down the scam, but he slipped up somehow, and now he's dead. And I'm never going to get out. And if they find out it was me brought him down here, they'll kill me. And if they don't kill me, I'll probably go to jail for 1,000 years anyway, because right now the whole damn thing is very exposed and very dangerous.
Who was the guy? I asked him.
He didn't have a name, Hubble said. Just a contact code. He said it was safer that way.
I can't believe they got him. He seemed like a capable guy to me.
Tell the truth, you remind me of him. You seem like a capable guy to me, too. What was he doing up there at the warehouse? I asked him. He shrugged and shook his head.
I don't understand that situation, he said. I put him together with another guy, and he was meeting with him up there, but wouldn't they have shot the other guy as well? I don't understand why they only got one of them.
Who was the other guy he was meeting with? I said. He stopped and shook his head.
I've told you way too much already, he said. I must be crazy. They'll kill me.
Who's on the inside of this thing? I asked him.
Don't you listen? He said. I'm not saying another word.
I don't want names, I said. Is it a big deal?
It's huge, he said.
Biggest thing you ever heard of.
How many people? I said. He shrugged and thought about it, counted up in his head.
10 people, he said. Not counting me.
I looked at him and shrugged.
10 people doesn't sound like a big deal, I said.
Well, this had help, he said. They're around when they're needed. I mean, a core of 10 people around here. 10 people in the know. Not counting me.
It's a very tight situation, but believe me, it's a big deal.
What about the guy you sent to meet with the investigator? I said. Is he one of the 10 people? Hubble shook his head.
I'm not counting him either, he said.
So there's you and him and 10 others, I said. Some kind of a big deal. He nodded glumly.
Biggest thing you ever heard of, he said again.
And right now it's very exposed, I asked him.
Why?
Because of this investigator poking about?
Hubble shook his head again. He was writhing around like my questions were tearing him up.
No, he said.
For another reason altogether. It's like a window of vulnerability is wide open right now. An exposure. It's been very risky, getting worse all the time, but now it could go either way. If we get through it, nobody will ever know anything. But if we don't get through it, it'll be the biggest sensation you ever heard of, believe me. Either way, it's going to be a close call.
I looked at him. He didn't look to me much like the sort of a guy who could cause the biggest sensation I ever heard of.
So how long is this exposure going to last? I asked him.
It's nearly over, he said.
Maybe a week. A week tomorrow is my guess, next Sunday. Maybe I'll live to see it.
So after next Sunday, you're not vulnerable anymore? I said.
Why not?
What's going to happen next Sunday? He shook his head and turned his face away. It was like if he couldn't see me, I wasn't there. Asking him questions.
What does pluribus mean? I asked him.
He wouldn't answer, just kept on shaking his head. His eyes were screwed shut with terror.
Is it a code for something? I said.
He wasn't hearing me. The conversation was over. I gave it up and we lapsed back into silence. That suited me well enough. I didn't want to know anything more. I didn't want to know anything at all. Being an outsider and knowing Hubble's business didn't seem to be a very smart combination. It hadn't done the tall guy with the shaved head a whole lot of good. I wasn't interested in sharing the same fate as him, dead at a warehouse gate, partially hidden under some old cardboard, 2 holes in my head, all my bones smashed. I just wanted to pass the time until Monday, and then get the hell out. By next Sunday, I plan to be a very long way away indeed.
Okay, Hubble, I said.
No more questions. He shrugged and nodded, sat silent for a long time. Then he spoke, quietly, with a lot of resignation in his voice.
Thanks, he said.
It's better that way.
I was rolled over on the narrow cot, trying to float away into some kind of limbo. But Hubble was restless. He was tossing and turning and blowing tight sighs. He was coming close to irritating me again. I turned to face him.
I'm sorry, he said. I'm very uptight. It was doing me good just to talk to somebody. I'd go crazy in here on my own. Can't we talk about something else? What about you? Tell me about yourself. Who are you, Reacher?
I shrugged at him. I'm nobody, I said. Just a guy passing through. I'll be gone on Monday.
Nobody's nobody, he said. We've all got a story. Tell me.
So I talked for a while, lying on my bed, running through the last 6 months. He lay on his bed, looking at the concrete ceiling, listening, keeping his mind off his problems. I told him about leaving from the Pentagon. Washington, Baltimore, Philadelphia, New York, Boston, Pittsburgh, Detroit, Chicago. Museums, music, cheap hotels, bars, buses, and trains. Solitude. Traveling through the land of my citizenship like a cheap tourist. Seeing most things for the first time. Looking at the history I'd learned in dusty schoolrooms half a world away. Looking at the big things that had shaped the nation. Battlefields. Factories. Declarations, revolutions, looking for the small things. Birthplaces, clubs, roads, legends. The big things and the small things which were supposed to represent home. I had found some of them. I told Hubble about the long hop through the endless plains and deltas, all the way down from Chicago to New Orleans, sliding around the Gulf Coast as far as Tampa. Then the Greyhound blasting north toward Atlanta. The crazy decision to bail out near Margrave. The long walk in the rain yesterday morning. Following a whim. Following some half-remembered note from my brothers saying he'd been through some little place where Blind Blake might have died over 60 years ago. As I told him about it, I felt pretty stupid. Hubble was scuffling with a nightmare, and I was following a meaningless pilgrimage. But he understood the urge.
I did that once, he said. On our honeymoon, we went to Europe. We stopped off in New York, and I spent half a day looking for the Dakota Building. You know, where John Lennon was shot. Then we spent 3 days in England walking around Liverpool looking for the Cavern Club, where the Beatles started out. Couldn't find it. I guess they knocked it down.
He talked on for a while, mostly about traveling. He had taken plenty of trips with his wife. They had enjoyed it. Been all over, Europe, Mexico, the Caribbean, all over the States and Canada. Had a great time together.
Don't you get lonely? He asked me.
Traveling on your own all the time? I told him no, I enjoyed it. I told him I appreciated the solitude, the anonymity, like I was invisible.
How do you mean, invisible? He said.
He seemed interested. I travel by road, I said. Always by road. Walk a bit, then ride the buses. Sometimes trains. Always pay cash, that way there's never a paper trail. No credit card transactions, no passenger manifests, nothing. Nobody could trace me. I never tell anybody my name. If I stay in a hotel, I pay cash and give them a made-up name.
Why? He said. Who the hell's after you?
Nobody, I said.
It's just a bit of fun.
I like anonymity. I feel like I'm beating the system. And right now, I'm truly pissed at the system. I saw him fall back to thinking. He thought a long time. I could see him deflate as he struggled with the problems that wouldn't go away. I could see his panic come and go like a tide.
So, give me your advice about Finley, he said. When he asks me about the confession, I'll say I was stressed out because of some business situation. I'll say there was some kind of rivalry, threats against my family. I'll say, I don't know anything about the dead guy, anything about the phone number. I'll deny everything. Then I'll just try to settle everything down. What do you think?
I thought it sounded like a pretty thin plan.
Tell me one thing, I said. Without giving me any more details, do you perform a useful function for them? Or are you just some kind of onlooker?
He pulled on his fingers and thought for a moment.
Yes, I perform a useful function for them, he said.
Crucial, even.
And if you weren't there to do it, I asked him, would they have to recruit someone else?
Yes, they would, he said. And it would be moderately difficult to do that, given the parameters of the function.
He was rating his chances of staying alive like he would rate a credit application up at his office.
Okay, I said. Your plan is as good as you're going to get. Go for it.
I didn't see what else he could do. He was a small cog in some kind of a big operation, but a crucial cog, and nobody wrecks a big operation for no reason. So his future was actually clear-cut. If they ever figured out it was him who had brought in the outside investigator, then he was definitely dead. But if they never found that out, then he was definitely safe. Simple as that. I figured he had a good enough chance because of one very persuasive fact. He had confessed because he had thought prison was some kind of a safe sanctuary where they couldn't get him. That had been part of his thinking behind it. It was bad thinking. He had been wrong. He wasn't safe from attack, quite the reverse. They could have got him if they had wanted to. But the other side of that particular coin was that he hadn't been attacked. As it happened, I had been, not Hubble. So I figured there was some kind of a proof there that he was okay. They weren't out to get him, because if they had wanted to kill him, they could have killed him by now, and they would have killed him by now. But they hadn't, even though they were apparently very uptight right now because of some kind of a temporary risk. So it seemed like proof. I began to think he would be okay.
Yes, Album, I said again. Go for it. It's the best you can do.
The cell stayed locked all day. The floor was silent. We lay on our beds and drifted through the rest of the afternoon. No more talking. We were all talked out. I was bored and wished I had brought that newspaper with me from the Margrave station house. I could have read it all over again. All about the president cutting crime prevention so he could get reelected, saving a buck on the Coast Guard today so he could spend 10 bucks on prisons like this one tomorrow. At about 7, the old orderly came by with dinner. We ate. He came back and picked up the tray. We drifted through the empty evening. At 10, the power banged off, and we were in darkness. Nightfall. I kept my shoes on and slept lightly, just in case Spivey had any more plans for me. At 7 in the morning, the lights came back on. Sunday. I woke up tired, but I forced myself to get up, forced myself to do a bit of stretching to ease off my sore body.
Hubble was awake, but silent. He was vaguely watching me exercise, still drifting. Breakfast arrived before